Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig, and we're at YAR 2015 in Brisbane, and it's great to be sitting here with James Lewis. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. Thanks, Craig. Thanks for the invite.
So, for people who don't know you, I know you from, I guess it was that blog post or that article that you wrote with Martin Fowler, which we were just talking before. A lot of people think is the microservices, and I'm doing air quotes here as I say that article, but you know, to me, was more about, I guess, the beginnings of the lean enterprise. But you are seen, I guess, as the ThoughtWorks microservices guy. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, yeah, it was about, I guess, 18 months ago or so now that Martin and I wrote that paper. And I think the interesting thing about that was we got to bring together a lot of the things we were seeing that were making companies effective. Lots of different industries, lots of different verticals, as I say, lots of sizes of teams, you know, web scale companies, and then you know, kind of startups and so on. And they all seem to be doing, they all seem to have a set of characteristics in common that were making them a success. And so it was pretty useful for us to get together and put that set of things down on air quotes again, paper. Mm-hmm. Obviously it's not paper, but there's been this huge cycle of hype actually around, I think, the name microservices. And I think it's, you know, I don't claim to invent that concept, or and neither does Martin. You know, there's a bunch of other people who've been working in this space for, you know, many years. So Fred George has been implementing microservice style architectures. Adrian Cockcroft with fine grained SOA. Dan North with, you know, replaceable component architectures. So, but yeah, it's certainly been an interesting journey over the last 18 months. Yeah.
So what's your, do you go back from that? I mean, what's your background? You know, just a software developer who found a pig, is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So I've been at ThoughtWorks about 10 years now. So almost exactly 10 years, in fact. And I was based out of the London office, apart from a brief sojourn to the US. And I was very lucky in London to be there at the same sort of time as a group of people who have gone on to do some pretty incredible things. So, yeah, really, I think, have changed the face of how we do software delivery. Mm. You know, both in terms of things like, you know, integration techniques, in terms of you know, bringing the web into our organizations and using the web integration styles, testing. So I'm thinking, you know, there's Nat Price and Steve Freeman, authors of Growing Object Oriented Software Through Test. There's Jim Weber, Ian Robinson. There's, you know, Dan North and Liz Carey from the BDD space. There's, you know, Dave Farley and Jez Humble and Chris Reed from the from, you know, of continuous delivery fame. So
pretty good circle to be working in.
It's a pretty good circle. And, cool. You know, it's one of these things. It's just luck, right? It's luck you end up working with this group of people. And then I always joke about ThoughtWorks is, you know, whether they're the people you're working with are names or not, you have to run so fast just to keep up with the people in ThoughtWorks that it's that you end up accidentally doing interesting things. And I think the microservices thing was an example of that. You know, just working with a lot of those people over a decade, fitting a lot of the patterns and practices together. Which led to this paper, essentially.
So, I think we forget a lot. I mean, as we were talking, as we were just kind of coming down to record, I'm a big XP fanatic. That was my introduction to the Agile world. Sure. And whilst I've kind of stopped coding as much as I'd like to these days, it's still where my allegiances lie. And when you look back over all those things that are in extreme programming, more importantly, when people say to me XP is dead, which is not, because it's just become part of the vernacular, but when you look at all the future things, there's always ThoughtWorks somewhere in there behind it. You know, continuous integration, you know, refactoring, all those key things that were there. You know, TDD, but then, you know, Dan taking it on board with to BDD, continuous delivery, which, you know, so all those things that have extended what was originally XP is, you know, of the work that, that you and your colleagues have just been trying things out. And
yeah, and I think the key thing about ThoughtWorks is it's a very pragmatic organization. So, and, you know, ThoughtWorks didn't invent these things. The people who were smart people who were working at ThoughtWorks at the time saw problems to solve and solved them, you know, so that they could deliver software more effectively. Mm. So continuous integration is a good example.
Stitchy could have been an insert three-letter acronym company in here and then, you know, put it behind a paywall and said, the only people that can use continuous delivery have to pay us some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
Whereas the stuff has just been given back to the community, essentially, in ideas and writings and papers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true. There has been a whole... Yeah, a lot of these techniques. I mean, I think Kent Beck might have something to say about refactoring, but there's a whole bunch of other techniques I mean, ThoughtWiz has been, I think, very supportive of open source initiatives and of the people who've been involved in those. I guess Cruise Control is an interesting one. That was an open source project for a long time, and then that was sort of brought in house to become Cruise, which was then, badged, and we thought, we can sell this and we'll call it GoCD, and then realized that really wasn't, at the reflective of us as an organization. So then again, it's been open sourced again, and that's been really successful. The number of third party plugins and things that are now appearing is pretty cool. Yeah.
Mm. But also, Cruise Control started the whole ecosystem of all the other popular systems that sit out there, and then continuous delivery, as you mentioned, the work of Jez and co.
Yep.
Then allowed those build frameworks and pipelines and things to be built on top of those.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I see that actually. So, I mean, there's a great diagram with the XP practices where they link together, and they're mutually reinforcing. So there's a phrase, I think it's called complementarianism or something from economics, and that basically says, that the sum is greater than the parts. And example of that is continuous integration. As soon as we had continuous integration and a continuous integration server, it made doing more testing more interesting, right? Because there's somewhere for tests to go, and as suddenly you start suddenly when you've got more tests to run, then you start to get these advances in CI, you start to get the sort of pipeline ideas, you get all these, and again then testing becomes more interesting because you start to get the BDD, so people start thinking more about that. I actually think that's kind of quite relevant with the microservices thing as well, because there is this sort of mutually supporting set of practices as well. One day I'll draw the diagram, like the XP diagram, and probably things like programmable infrastructure, compute on demand will be one of those core things in the middle if you removed it.
Yeah, it's like this is sort of keep expanding out as we keep finding new and interesting ways to deal with it.
Yes, yeah, and of course, as a result, we're rapidly approaching the container singularity, right?
That's right. So. Yeah. At some point, yes, it'll evolve upon itself.
Yeah.
Microservices. That's what you hear talking about at the conference.
Yeah.
Agile podcast. Maybe some of the listeners here maybe don't know what it is. Probably more importantly, a little confused about what microservices is. So, how would you explain microservices to someone who goes, just give me the cliff notes?
I'll give me the cliff notes. That's a tough one. So, I mean, because it's fundamentally a complex subject. This grew out, I think, of a... if you picture yourself working on a project, maybe you're working on a legacy software system. It's this big kind of monolithic application. The roots of monolith, incidentally, go back to Unix. That was what the Unix... early Unix folk used the phrase monolith, but you're working on this big monolithic application, and your day job is essentially pretty horrible. You're having to kind of wrangle this big ball of mud, writing tests is difficult, and suddenly there's a rush job where people you need to get these features out into production, and it's just almost often becomes very, very difficult to actually make changes in any sort of rapid form on these big ball of mud style applications. But the thinking with microservices was, what happens simply if we break these things out into smaller components, smaller parts, organize teams around them, and potentially scale teams around them, such that we can deliver software more quickly because the individual pieces are smaller. So we can get stuff out into production faster, we can test these things in isolation, deploy them in isolation, we can throw them away, we can replace them over time if we want to. I use Terry Pratchett's description from The Fifth Elephant of My Family's Axe to illustrate this idea of building systems that are composed of parts that you can independently throw away. Mm. So, you know, the behavior of the system remains the same on the outside, but you can just flex lots of little bits internally, throw them away, rewrite them. You know, my family's axe is, you know, this is the king of the dwarves, and he says, you know, this is my axe, it's been in my family for 900 years. You know, of course, sometimes we've changed the blade, sometimes we've changed the handle, but is this 900 years later, you know, not my family's axe? And I mean, it's a restatement of the ship of Theseus from ancient Greek Greek mythology. But yeah, that's for me the idea. In terms of a short version of that, you'd think I'd be able to give a micro explanation of microservices, but unfortunately, I appear not to be able to at this point.
I mean, it's got a lot of hype, but I mean, I guess the thing that I take away from there are two things that I take away from that. Firstly, it matches what, you know, we talk about in the Agile community all the time, which is breaking things down into smaller chunks, being able to, you know, deploy increments. And so this is the natural, you know, I think a lot of early Scrum teams really struggled with getting to the end of that 2-week, 4-week sprint, whatever it might be, and having something to show. Mm. Microservices really, you know, is one of those things where, well, if you don't have something to show in that amount of time, you'd probably run a microservice.
Right, yeah. No, that's, I mean, and there are different sort of scales of that. I mean, there's quite a few people who say you should be able to rewrite one of these things in a day, right? Mm. You know, they're almost disposable. The reality is a lot of organizations are writing slightly bigger ones, you know, 2,000-3,000 lines of code and so on. Mm. But that, I guess to use the technical language a little, it's related to this idea of business and architecture isomorphism. So if you look at your architecture, you should be able to see the business represented in it, you know, if I'm a business person, and if, you know, if I look at the business the other way around as well. And I think that's interesting from a scaling agile, scaling teams perspective, because it's, you start to have more levers to pull. So rather than, you know, just look at, okay, we'll have a Scrum team and requirements will be fed in to build, you know, a part of this big application we'll hit, you start to be able to reinforce the boundaries of the actual software you're building by constraining it to microservices delivered by a single team, a single Scrum team. And you're right, it's about feedback cycles. Everything's about feedback cycles.
Right. So in the early days, I mean, we often relate to Conway's Law.
Yeah.
It often gets thrown up in a slide deck about this stuff. Was that what enabled it in the early days when you and your pals at ThoughtWorks, you know, in the UK were playing around, was that kind of what built it out, or did you specifically have to go and you know, break those silos down in the first place to then be able to do this?
Great question. So, I mean, and the consultant's answer, of course, is it depends. I mean,
it's of course we did.
Of course we did.
And you can do the same in my organisation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm known as not a very good salesperson. I tend to give too honest answers. So, you know, on the one hand, yes, I've been involved in programs where we did have the flexibility to do that, where we could, you know, work out how to organize delivery around sort of product-based teams. But then you look at other big companies like Netflix, they do the same thing. You look at REA over in Australia, you know, famously they split around, I think it's lines of business and then value streams and then, you know, stable teams within those value streams. And at each level that reinforces both, it reinforces the separation of concerns between the teams and therefore between the services. So it's like this, reinforcing factor essentially. So you know, if your teams look like your architecture, then what happens is your architecture stays looking like your teams rather than morphing into something else. Yeah.
But were the early implementations aided by the fact that those organisations were small and nimble to begin with, or was there actually, did you have to go on and go, well, if we want to do this, we have to change the underlying structure of the organisation to make it work?
I would say maybe a bit of both. I mean, so example from investment banking, going back, you know, a decade, would be if you work in a front office team in investment banking, in general, you're working for, you know, with on-site customers because you're working with the traders right on your desk. And in general, my experience was you were building out really small little applications in order to, you know, take advantage of, you know, very swiftly changing market conditions. And the understanding of risk on those sort of small teams you know, was such that you could have very different conversations than we're used to with, you know, the kind of scrum. Every 2 weeks we're going to do some sprint planning and so on, do some estimation. You know, when those teams, it's we need this thing. Is it going to be ready within 3 days? Well, maybe. We'll make a ton of money. Go ahead and try. You know, as opposed to the as a more regimented cadence that you tend to get on bigger agile teams. Then, so I'm, you know, I'm not sure it's always been there in certain places, but I think the characteristics of those places maybe are different. So the characteristics of those front office teams are, you know, you understand risk, you've got on-site customers, and you want to take advantage of this of changing market conditions very, very fast. So if you don't have that pressure,
the culture's already there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, most organisations that I'm, you know, involved with these days, certainly in the UK, who are looking at SOA and fine-grained SOA, they're doing it in response to fear in a lot of ways, right? Fear of these upstart competitors who are suddenly going to come and take their markets away from them. Banking's a great example, retail banking, where you tend to have these giant organizations, giant software development groups, not necessarily acting in the most effective way, should we say? Mm-hmm. And suddenly they're faced with you know, new players in the market, Atom Bank, Getmondo, etc. And they're having to think about doing things differently. Retail's another good example of that. You know, yeah, Amazon did this over a decade ago now, and suddenly, you know, a lot of the really big bricks and mortar retail groups are suddenly realizing that they can't just lean on the big enterprise vendor driven solutions that they used to lean on these days in order to keep up, even not even just get ahead, but in order to keep up, they have to start thinking in terms of organizational design as well as the software they're building. So
yeah. There's been some criticism, and it's even something I noticed on, you know, on Twitter even today, mm-hmm. where
it wasn't about my thongs. incidentally, if you're listening to outside of Australia, you know, I'm wearing flip flops. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. If you read things like he's wearing a thong, he didn't go on stage wearing very little clothes. No, I'm going to test that. that's a thought that now I don't bring on my mind. Where's it going with this? So this is a. I guess some people argue that this is, you know, there's bad things about microservices, or perhaps mm-hmm. not the way. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, are there situations where this makes sense and situations where it doesn't?
That's a great question again. Are there situations where it doesn't make sense? Absolutely, there are. It is a style of building software that is, you know, that is applicable in certain circumstances. That, you know, that has been true for architectural styles, you know, ever since we've started building software. You can't use the same hammer, you know, you can't treat everything as a nail just because you own a hammer, right? It is no silver bullet. I quote extensively, or often rather, the 16th rule of Unix programming, which is the rule of diversity. Distrust all claims for one true way. You know, it doesn't matter if whoever says microservices will have to, you know, this is going to solve all our problems. It won't. It'll introduce other complexities. Specifically, actually, it's not a 101 style of building software. You know, there is. You need to start thinking of things that that often you only thought about a tiny bit if you were building monoliths. So the scariest, as an example, the scariest thing on projects for me was always integration points. Well, I need to talk to these different integration points. Are they going to be stable? How are we going to integrate with them? You know, what kind of APIs are they using? What happens when they change their APIs? All these things. But of course, if you're building microservice-style systems, then like that increases by an order of magnitude. Everything's integration, right? You've got to deal with integration all over the place. What does that mean for things like integration environments? How do you ensure that you can test everything? How do you ensure that before you get into production, or maybe in production, you verify that your system's working? So it's certainly not the answer to everyone's prayers in terms of the silver bullet.
So I think back 10 years ago, when people would ask me the question, do I do lean, agile, or waterfall? And I used to be able to kind of say, well, you choose waterfall for this, you choose lean. And over the years now, you know, now we're sitting here in 2015, that question doesn't make any sense to me anymore.
Yeah.
It's more along the lines, well, just where do you want to be, you know, risk-wise on your lean and agile adoption? And, mm-hmm. You know, waterfalls really only if you do want to throw your money up against the wall or you do have a really extremely risky you know, thing to do. I'm wondering if the microservices might fall in that same boat as it starts to evolve. It's not the whether we do big things or small things anymore. It's just, you know, the size.
I think that's a very good point. I think there probably will be a pendulum effect going on, right? So I suspect a lot of organizations will charge into this and start building really tiny things and get loads of them and then suddenly realize, actually, this is really painful to manage all this stuff. And then the pendulum will swing back the other way and we'll start building slightly bigger things again, I suspect. But I also think that it won't swing back all the way. I don't think, you know, I think some energy will be lost to use, I guess, the to extend the metaphor. Some energy will be lost and we won't end up with these giant, you know, big monolithic things that will be broken up. And if that's the case, that's fine, you know, because we'll still have the advantages of being able to deploy on demand. We'll still have the advantages of you know, the org design stuff. We'll still hopefully have, you know, the advantages of you know, the simpler ways of doing integration rather than relying on big kind of, you know, big appliances where you just
put all your technology that's helped us there. Yeah. In the same way that I don't think Agile could have taken off any earlier than 2001 because, you know, we were just starting to get internet, we were just starting to get laptops and mobile and all those types of things. In the same way, I think it's now the right time. You know, I don't think if we had you know, being able to spin up things like Amazon Web Services or languages that actually help us support such things. So you know, I think, you know, people who kind of cry back to the old days, well, that's fine, but keep delivering in Visual Basic 6 if you like.
Yeah, you know? You have to move the whole world back, right? Mm-hmm. You can't selectively go back. The past is closed around whatever. Absolutely. I think that's right. And I think specifically with microservices, it is you know, Amazon and AWS was the game changer. I really think that. And without that happening, and you know, steps forward that have been made since then, this style would be almost impossible. But saying that, you know, I was chatting with Dave Farley and. A few weeks ago, let's go to Copenhagen, the conference over in Europe, and you know, he was sort of saying, you mentioned about XP, you mentioned about, you know, we know how to do some of this stuff. That's what he was saying. It's like, we know how to deliver some of this, deliver software, or there are a set of practices that we now know we can lean on. Continuous delivery, build pipelines, the XP practices, like pairing, all these, you know, short feedback loops, getting value out into production early, you know, testing hypotheses. This is how software, for most circumstances, probably should be built these days. And if you're not building software that way, then maybe you've gone down the wrong trouser leg of history to go back to Terry Pratchett.
You can't change your employer, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because there'll be like those banks that, you know, do wake up in the morning and go, what do we do?
Yeah.
We touched on the Lean Enterprise before, and kind of remiss me not to mention that. So obviously Jez and a bunch of other people have gone on and written that stuff up, but a lot of those ideas really, you know, I think really started to percolate in the community, you know, from that paper that that you and Martin wrote. At least some of those, you know, things around how the organisation is set up.
I'm not going to claim credit for Lean Enterprise at all. I mean, I think that's an evolution of thinking from Jez and a few other, you know, Joanne and Barry. That I wouldn't say necessarily is orthogonal to microservices, but maybe it was in parallel.
Well, certainly the organisational.
So the organisational design aspect, I think, certainly has, there are some parallels, yeah, definitely. And we talk about the same things, you know, organising around, you know, business impact. How can we structure teams so that we minimise the cost of delay from getting idea out into production and earning money? And I think that's, you know, that's what one of the things I think Lean Enterprise is very, very, you know, talks very strongly to. I mean, actually, I've been very excited to be here at Yara, because maybe the father of all these ideas in some ways is here, Don Reinertsen. You know, the principles of product development flow is maybe a shared point back in history where
I've been introducing him twice here, and I'm just in awe as I'm standing there.
Yeah, like, yeah. Am I allowed to say geek crush? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, there's only two people I've had. Don and Dan are the two people. Remember the first time I met Dan, I just was looking at him going, I couldn't even get his name out. I was going, hello, my name's Craig. That looked like a right rod git, but anyway. Is a lean enterprise, I guess, what ThoughtWorks is seeing as the, dare I say it, the perfect agile world at the moment? I mean, there's so much gumph out there in the community.
Yeah.
Is that, at the moment, at least from the point of view of ThoughtWorks, the way?
I think lean enterprise is a fantastic set of ideas and principles that you can use to structure how you think about how your organization looks, right, in order to get stuff done. I think the interesting thing is there are still gaps. I mean, the hard thing is how, right? How do you actually do this stuff? It's got some great information in it. But how do you translate that if I am the CTO or CIO of a multi tens of thousands of person company? How do I translate that into action in the real world? And I think this is where a lot of the other agile frameworks are starting to get some traction, right? Lessons safe and all these kinds of things. But personally, I think they're missing the point because they're not focusing on the right things. I think that the focus on flow is the thing that needs to be predominant rather than the focus on structure and scaling the things that you do. Is ThoughtWorks pushing it? I wouldn't say ThoughtWorks is pushing it. I would say that, again, it's an evolution of how we've always thought organizations maybe should.
It's probably a documentation of the current thinking.
I think so. I think that's probably fair. Yeah, and I say ThoughtWorks. I mean, as I say, ThoughtWorks is a 3,500 person company. Not everyone in ThoughtWorks thinks like that. Certainly, Joe, Barry, and Jez, who were very preeminent in the community in ThoughtWorks, were thinking these things. Mm. And again, I think it's an evolution of the work that Dan was doing 8 years ago, and so on. So yeah.
The last thing I want to ask you before we move away is one of your roles is you're on the was it the technology advisory committee?
Board, yeah, that's
board, whatever it is. You know the right name. But anyway, the Tech Radar, which is something that I eagerly await to come out and have a look at.
Yeah.
And either go, woohoo, or like, where'd you do that? I just really wonder, how does that work? Do you kind of throw darts against the wall and try and figure stuff out? Because I'm sure you must get some hate mail along with, celebration on that.
Yeah, yeah. People really didn't like our stance on Gitflow this time around. To answer the question, yeah, really it is darts against the wall, kind of systematic darts until you hit every single thing or something. So, I mean, the way it works is every 6 months, about 20, 22 or so people get together. They're the heads of tech from the different regions, our CTO, chief scientist, a number of assorted hangers-on like myself. We meet face-to-face for a week or so, and about half of that time we spend putting the radar together. We tend to bring a whole bunch of ideas from our regions. So, our different offices will have a little events beforehand. And then over the course of a few days, we'll talk through every single item. So, we'll start off with probably 300 new items to go on there. Mm. Because everyone, stickies, it's ThoughtWorks. So stationary-driven decision-making. So lots of post-it notes that go on the walls. And then we talk through every single thing. So our CTO, Rebecca Parsons, who's awesome, she certainly applies a voting mechanism very effectively where, we hold up red cards or green cards or yellow cards if we want to continue this discussion. And so we talk through everything, and then we talk through all the things that are currently on the radar, and we try and whittle down from 300-400 to the 100 that stay on there. So it's a pretty intense experience, I have to say. But what I love about it is it's a point in time snapshot of what's going on in the projects, inside the projects of a pretty large these days 3,500 person software development organization. So
it's not supposed to be a statement of fact. It's a statement. Yeah. I think it's a good statement of discussion.
Yeah.
Why has this moved away? Maybe it is because the community is lacking or those type of things. So.
Yeah, and it's I guess the other interesting thing is it's not paid for, right? You can't get on the radar unless ThoughtWorks people are using something, That's the only way to get on there. It's not like you can pay us and say, we've got this cool new tool. You know, we often get these emails, how can we get on the radar? And the question is, we'll get some of our folk excited about what you're doing, and if they start using your stuff, then maybe it'll get on the radar, you know. It's also not comprehensive, you know, so it's not like... I was going to laugh about JavaScript. You know, it's not like we survey every single MVVM library.
There'd be 100 of those online right now.
I think there were at one point. But we don't survey everything. It's just the stuff that people are using that's working. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, it's been great catching up with you. If people want to know more about you, James, and the stuff that you're thinking about, where can they find you on the interweb?
On the interwebinets, you can find me on Twitter at Boicy, B-O-I-C-Y. You can email me, if you like, at james.lewis@thorwicks.com. And I've got a very underused blog at bovon.org. Don't ask.
And of course, if they want to sort of go and read some more about the microservices stuff, they would do worse than to go and take a look at the post or the paper that you and Martin wrote.
Absolutely.
Even though it's a few years old, it's still completely relevant.
Yeah, it's about 2 years old. I mean, the other thing is, I mean, if you're interested in that, Sam Newman, a colleague, we've developed a lot of these ideas or worked on a lot of this stuff, a lot of projects together, and he's written a cracking book called Building Microservices. It was quite annoying because I was thinking about writing a book, and turns out he wrote a really good one, so I don't have to now.
Yeah, but your ideas are in there.
That's
so
fine.
Well, it's been great spending time with you, James.
Thanks very much, Greg. Cheers.